Last December, China announced a ban on all importation domestic ivory trade by the end of 2017. Despite the ban on international trade of ivory, poachers still hunt and kill elephants for their tusks. Roughly 50,000 African elephants are now being killed each year from a population of fewer than 500,000 animals. In an effort to reduce elephant poaching, scientists have come up with new methods to track the exact location where elephants are being hunted. Sam Wasser, a conservation biologist at the University of Washington, has developed a unique method. It involves using the DNA found in elephant dung to trace these locations. And I'm very pleased he joins us now. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So you've been referred to as a wildlife detective. How did you earn that title? What's your official title?
I'm the director of the Center for Conservation Biology at the University of Washington. The work that we are doing that led to that title is tracking the source of the illegal ivory trade, where the ivory are actually being poached. And we do that largely by creating a reference map of elephants across the continent of Africa and getting DNA from dung samples of the elephants, because they're very easy to collect, the samples are. And once we have gotten the DNA information from that, we test it to see, well, how good are we at being able to tell that this elephant came from this population versus that population. And we showed that this has very high precision. We can take a sample from an elephant from anywhere in Africa and get it to within 300 kilometers of where it came from, sometimes to the very park. And so then we take the same information from ivory that's been poached and seized, and we match it to that map, and we can then tell where the ivory came from.
So let's go all the way back to the beginning, because if I remember correctly, you didn't get into this for the purpose of being a part of, you know, helping to stop the illegal ivory trade. How did you get started, and what led you to looking into elephants?
Sure. Well, I did my PhD on wild baboons in southeastern Tanzania, a place called the Mikumi Salu ecosystem. And I started that work in 1979, which is the time when elephant poaching really took off. There were 700,000 elephants killed between 1979 and 1987, and the largest amount of the poaching happened to be in the place I was doing my baboon work. Now, the baboon work, I was looking at how baboons control the timing of their reproduction. And to do that, I developed ways to measure their hormones in their feces. And at the same time, I began to realize how powerful this tool is, because, I mean, feces sounds like a gross thing to study, but the fact of the matter is it's the most accessible wildlife product that there is, so it's easy to find. And the more I started to work on these samples, the more I realized how much information was there. We get DNA from the animal. You get DNA from what the animal was eating. You can tell the sex of the animal. You can tell all kinds of things about their physiology. Are they pregnant or not? Are they stressed or not? Are they nutritionally compromised or not? Even toxins we can get from feces. So when you have that high accessibility of samples, it really creates a tremendous opportunity to understand what's going on in these animals. So as time went by and I learned the power of this method, we eventually developed ways to get DNA out of the feces, and I was seeing how much impact poaching was having on the elephant populations, I really wanted to try to apply this to an important conservation problem. And when, as soon as we were able to get DNA out of the feces, I realized that's the way to approach this. I could map elephant genetics across the continent, and we just had to figure out how to get DNA out of ivory, which we did shortly thereafter, and then we were up and running.
So it was the collection of feces and getting that data and mapping out where the elephants are or were, and then next came the DNA, taking DNA from ivory and then matching. And then I think you said earlier you were able to match the DNA from the elephant who lost its ivory ivory to a an elephant population. I think somewhere in usually in Tanzania, correct?
Well, so we what started to happen. The short answer is that for the last decade, we have been focusing on where did all the large ivory seizures come from. Mm-hmm. And a large ivory seizure, it's very important to note that. So those are seizures that are over a half a ton, and they're worth over $1 million each. And that's 70% of all seizures are in these large are seized in these large ivory seizures. And so we wanted to know where was most of that poaching going on that was supplying this trade, because that because of the size and the value of those are driven by transnational organized crime syndicates, which are the ones doing the greatest amount of damage to elephants. And just to put this in perspective, there's 400,000 elephants left in Africa, and 40,000 are being killed a year right now. So we really wanted to find out, are there poaching hotspots where most ivory, most of the ivory that's seized is actually coming from? And we were able to show over the last decade that virtually 100% of those large ivory seizures was coming from just two places. The biggest amount was coming from savanna elephants. This is 78% of all seizures were coming from an area in of savanna Africa that was focused on Tanzania primarily, but going from northern Mozambique at the southern border of Tanzania all the way up through Tanzania into the southern part of Kenya. So that area was the biggest poaching hotspot for ivory. And then the second most important one, where 22% of all seizures came from forest elephants. And they're really genetically very distinct. And those forest elephants were almost all poached in a place we call the Tridom, which is the northeast corner of Gabon and the northwest corner of Republic of Congo and the southeast corner of Cameroon.
So we're talking about elephants in Africa, but where does the demand for ivory come from?
Well, the biggest demand by far is China. However, another huge source of demand has always been Japan, and I should point out that for a long time Japan was the biggest source, the biggest demand for ivory. But then, as China started to increase their desire for ivory, China was predominating in the media, and everybody kind of forgot about Japan. But Japan is still a very big source of demand for ivory. The United States has also been a huge demand, put a huge demand on ivory. Also, a lot of hunters buy small pieces of ivory. Much of it is smuggled in from China, and they use that to carve into the handles of their guns and their knives. That's one of the reasons why President Obama had such a difficult time passing the ivory ban in the United States, is that people who were against gun control were believing this is just another way to control guns, whereas really they were trying to stop the smuggling of illegal product. So while China is by far the biggest, they are not the only ones trying to get ivory. A lot of ivory goes to Vietnam, but then again, it's complicated because Vietnam is a big place where ivory is ultimately unloaded, but very often Chinese come through and buy it in Vietnam and take it through the porous border. So it's a bit complicated.
Yes, complicated. And ivory shipments are it's all illegal, and yet it persists. I mean, is this something? Is the reason why it persists is because from workers at docks right on up to heads of government turn a blind eye at the source?
Well, again, there are many layers if you ask why it persists. I would say the biggest reason that it persists is that it's a transnational organized crime. So you have very, very clever criminal organizations that make it their job to make sure that demand is still out there and that they have a way of moving it. And a lot of it is trickery. So here's an example, with not taking ivory, but take rhino horn. So rhino horn used to be, the primary use used to be to make dagger handles in Yemen. Well, that's not a very big market, and after a while, that kind of piddled out, and so then a very clever entrepreneur said, oh, well, rhino horn now is good for sexual dysfunction. Kind of the natural Viagra, if you will. And after a while, that started to be shown to be not really that, not real. And then someone else, largely from Vietnam, started to spread rumor that rhino horn cures cancer. And that is really when the price of rhino horn just took off to the point that now it's $60,000 a kilo. It's, you know, worth more than many illicit drugs. And that is because someone created a false market and exploited a very vulnerable population. But, of course, that's just one element. Then you also have the element of criminal entities that have worked very hard to be able to get the ivory out. So let's just take now moving back to China, for example. We know that just recently China has said that by the end of 2017, they are going to stop all ivory sales in their country. And that's a very welcome decision on their part, and they really need to be acknowledged for doing that. It's very important. But in the meantime, we have a full year where poachers are likely going to try to take as much ivory as they can to sell in the market before China's market closes down. So these kind of things, you have to anticipate what the criminal syndicates are doing and what the impact of your decisions are going to have once you make them public. And another factor is that some people believe, and I'm among them, that a major part of the market in China is not the actual ivory markets themselves. It's people that are kind of forecasters, and they are very wealthy individuals that are buying up large ivory tusks, and they are stockpiling them. They're keeping them, hoping that eventually the elephants are going to go extinct, and when they do, then it will be legal to sell ivory again, and they will have all the ivory, and they will make a fortune. So if that happens, then the ban that China is making will have very minimal effect. But the bottom line here is that it's these organized criminal networks that are so hard to stop, because all this is occurring in a world environment that works so hard to promote international trade. So there are so many ways to move contraband, and having a legal market really facilitates that.
So I'm talking with Dr. Sam Wasser of the University of Washington about his very unique way of tracking elephants and how he's using that to sort of help combat the illegal ivory trade, and that is mapping elephant populations using their dung, using the DNA he gets from their feces to be able to track where elephants are, but also to track elephants who have been stripped of their ivory. You were calling it a criminal syndicate here, but has your work led to any major arrests of poachers?
It has led to arrests and prosecutions. Just to put this into perspective, this is the illegal wildlife trade is now listed to be the fourth largest transnational organized crime in the world. It's worth $20 billion a year. And that puts it, you know, on par with the gun trade, the drug trade, human trafficking. So this is a very serious crime. Now, one of the things that has happened is you asked me about has our work led to prosecutions, and the answer is yes. There is also another, and I'll tell you that in a second, but I need to give you a little bit of information beforehand about a second thing that our work does.
We only have a few seconds left, but quickly.
Okay. So we are able to, it turns out that the two tusks from the same animal often get separated before they're shipped out into successive seizures. And we've been able to also genetically match them and find that individual traffickers are actually moving large amounts of ivory in successive seizures. And we can tell that because the one tusk is in one seizure and then we genetically match it to another tusk. And that's been able to tell us who the major trafficking networks are. And those are the people that we put away.
Dr. Wasser, thank you very much. I've been speaking with conservation biologist Dr. Sam Wasser, whose research is helping not only elephant populations, but other species around the world, including bears, wolves, and whales. Dr. Wasser, thanks so much for joining us today. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.